Hello, everyone, and welcome to Let's Take a Stab at It. I'm your host, John Hoyer, and with me is...
Jason Bartsch, and back with us is Ohio Zone.
Hey, everybody, it's Trevor. Hey, everyone's favorite guest.
Don't you have a new nickname now? Isn't it Trevor? Let me read this here. Goofy Pooper Charity?
Is that correct? That's me. Yep. What up?
Explain.
Well, so
poops goofy.
Say no more. No, so I got this bit going on my Twitter at Trevor Charity, by the way, where every
no
month,
personal promotion on this podcast.
Okay,
we're cutting
I got this bit where I changed my nickname, so like it'll be like random ones like Fatty Arbuckle or the Bamboozler. Like this month, it's Goofy Pooper.
Is there a story behind that, or it's just it's the name that won your heart?
Nope, it's just something I randomly picked. Well, I'm like an old seer, and I just look in the distance, and I'm like,
"You are the self-proclaimed king of Halloween, so it's fitting."
Yes, I am.
Well, that's over now. he gave it up for the guy, and now he's embracing Goofy Pooper. Okay, that's what we're going with.
What a fall from grace. A fall from nickname grace.
So that's the final name, right? That's what you're sticking with, right, on the show?
Sure.
The Goofy Halloween Pooper guy.
Okay. All right.
This is off to a hot start.
Let's move on to what we've been watching. Trevor, what have you been watching?
I watched this movie that is a Shudder original. It's called Psycho Goreman. It's a horror comedy, and it's got like a lot of unknown actors and stuff in it. And the movie is pretty much like if Adult Swim made a movie. It's just all random stuff in it. So the movie's about it starts off introducing that there's this galactic evil warlord who was beaten by like this coalition of like church, like space church and like space politicians. And they buried him in Earth. And then these two kids unearth him and like they get this gem and then they have full control of him. So he's just pretty much randomly doing like, you know, stuff. And in the meantime, the Space Templars are trying to get him along with his minions are trying to get the kids too. So it's like a weird mixture of like the Terminator and Suburban Commando.
Okay.
When did that come out?
That came out, I think, in 2019, 2020.
Okay, newer one. Nice. Another Shudder shout out if anyone's listening.
Get that. Use the code STAB out to get 0% off.
Don't tell people that. Your code didn't work.
I would like it if they would just hire me, actually. Just
John, what have you been watching?
All right, so I watched a movie called The Stuff. So it's a Larry Cohen film from 1985, I believe. And it's about, for anyone who's ever seen the Futurama episode, The Problem with Poplars, where they find like these little things that they eat and they can't stop eating them. It's kind of based on this movie where they find like this white yogurt that's like just kind of seeping out of the ground. And people are like, let me taste it. So they eat it. And then they're like, this is delicious. And then it becomes this product that's got like a jingle and everything. And everyone who eats it slowly gets like taken over by like the stuff. And the main character is played by Michael Moriarty. And he is working for another company trying to figure out what's in the stuff. And as he's like uncovering what's going on, he sees like this like grand conspiracy brewing with it. It's really ridiculous because it's like kind of like a like The Blob or like a monster movie, but it also has a lot of good like social commentary about like the excesses of like the 80s and commercialism, consumerism, etc. And I don't know, I just thought it was fantastic. And the movie's like an hour and a half, maybe close to an hour and a half, and this thing moves, and I just love it.
You love hour and a half long movies. That's your sweet spot.
Well, nowadays everything's like 2 hours and 20 minutes for everything.
Yeah, everybody's got a lot more to say now. the stuff kind of sounds like it has a little bit of a brain damage vibe, a movie we talked about a few weeks
back. It's like
is it as out there as that? Like
it's not as like It's okay, so it's not as like funny, I guess, but it's maybe a little bit more satirical.
Okay.
About like taking aim at like the right people and just kind of like attacking them. So I really like, I don't know, it's just, it's interesting because Larry Cohen makes these movies that are like, the premise sounds like, oh, this is like going to be like a ridiculous comedy sort of thing. Then when you watch it, it's like, it's really engaging and involving on like a character level. Like, yeah, the characters are actually pretty decently defined for what you would, more so than what you would expect from a movie like this.
It takes skill to pull off something like that. That it kind of reminds me of the way you described it. Reminds me of the second season of American Vandal on Netflix. I know you guys haven't watched that, or at least John hasn't. But it's like they take like a ridiculous premise, like they're trying to catch this guy called the Turd Burglar, and then it ends up like having this like really kind of poignant social commentary towards the end. And I don't know, I appreciate someone who's able to kind of balance an absurd premise with some biting social commentary.
That's pretty cool. I didn't know that Trevor was the villain of that season. Fucking sing!
Screw you.
All right, well, Jason, what have you been watching?
So, John,
yes,
actually, no, this is, I'm telling the people, John actually visited me in my home. I let him into my home. And,
yeah. Ooh, sleepover.
And so we had a little John Carpenter marathon. Because I embarrassed him so much on the podcast because I hadn't seen all of John Carpenter's movies. He decided to force me to watch them.
Yeah, I forced you. Locked all the doors. That's what happened. No, he made me bring a Blu-ray player over.
I kid. Yeah, I forced. I begged him to bring his HD Blu-ray player and his 4K Blu-ray player, and we watched Escape from New York and Assault on Precinct 13, and both are really cool. Escape from New York, Kurt Russell, it's set in the future, which is 1997, incidentally, and Manhattan
future.
the entire island of Manhattan has become a prison, and
accurate,
the president's plane crashes there. The president's stranded there and Kurt Russell has to go rescue him. Really cool. I really enjoyed it. The other one, Assault on Precinct 13. It was these prisoners are held in holding cells for this precinct's last day. And they just so happen to be ambushed by this gang. And it's kind of this whole face off between, you know, the inside prisoners and the cops and the outside bad guys. And they're both really cool. It's interesting to see the scope of Carpenter's films.
He's not just a horror director.
Yeah.
He does a bunch of different things.
I was pretty impressed. I mean, he's got awesome instincts and, you know, everybody knows. I'm not saying anything anybody doesn't know. He's an all timer, but, yeah, I don't know. They were great. I think prefer his more horror oriented things, but mm-hmm. You know, these are both really fun movies.
Well, see folks, I told you I'd get them and I got them. So, got you know, you're welcome, everyone. We turned another John Carpenter fan here.
Another convert. Yeah.
Yeah. He's down with JC, you know. That's so corny. Jason's turning me into him.
No, it's always been in there. I've just awakened it.
All right, so let's get to our review of Halloween 2018.
All right, the synopsis: Halloween (parentheses 2018). 40 years after the events of the first Halloween, Michael Myers escapes from an institution and returns to Haddonfield, where Laurie Strode has spent years planning for his return. As Michael begins to wreak havoc on the town, Laurie attempts to reconnect with her estranged family, who has grown distant over the years due to Laurie's obsession with defeating Michael. So this is, for those who don't know, a direct sequel to the 1978, right? Halloween, the original?
Yeah, even though it's the same name.
Even though it's the same name. How? Before we get into it, what are your thoughts on that? Little lazy, right?
I don't
little
like
lazy.
It.
I
don't
like it. Neither do I.
It's confusing.
We'll get into this later, but it's basically like this new trend of like, well, like video games do it, movies do it, where it's like, okay, it's actually a sequel to this movie, but it's kind of a remake in a way.
Yeah. It's like they respected it enough to not remake it, but we're going to call it the same thing.
Yeah. We get the old characters we like back, and they're old now, but, you know.
Yeah. So it's a direct sequel. It throws out everything in between. And in this one, Laurie is not Michael's sister.
Nope.
Josh Hartnett is no longer canon.
I know that's tough for you, Jason.
Sorry, ladies.
Which I'm still trying to cope with that. But yeah, it's a fun movie. John, what did you think about this one?
All right. So I initially had mixed feelings when I first saw it. I saw it again. I feel like there's a lot to like about the movie, although I still have some reservations here. So I would say some of the negatives I would go with, I think there's too many like side stories and characters that don't really need to be there. But for me, what really works is thematically, it just feels like a great continuation of what like the original film was trying to say. So they kind of have a lot of characters. Well, they show Michael as like this inscrutable figure that drives everyone around him crazy as they try to figure out what the fuck is up with him. They're like, what is going on here? Tell me something. Talk. And I get that. I don't know. I think that's an interesting take on that. And it kind of feels like a natural progression from the first film.
So Michael's like the opposite of that kid in grade school that would just repeat everything you said and drive you crazy. And like, you couldn't get him to stop. Like, he's like the opposite of that. Like, it drives everyone crazy that like, what is your deal, Michael?
Yeah, because it's like you would go, all right, you're coming back to kill Laurie, right? And then like, not really.
Maybe
I'm doing other things now. I've moved on. And you're like, but why?
yeah. He's got other stuff on his schedule. Like, who knows what? I mean, he's been locked up for a while. Maybe he just wants to go to Waffle House or something.
Yeah, I know.
Trevor, what are your thoughts?
I enjoyed it a lot more than I think you did on like your original watch of it. But I thought it was really good. I do agree on the idea of the all the mini characters going on, like all the side stories and everything. Ultimately, for most of them, to be cannon fodder for Michael, you know. And but all in all, I thought it was a very good movie. Comparatively to some of the Halloween sequels, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of funny though, because it's like if you were to talk to me about this, you would be like, "Oh, is John's a little mixed on this movie?" And then I go, "Okay, anyway, it's my second favorite Halloween movie, like so, by a long shot."
So is this that good, or are you not just as high on the other ones, or a little bit?
So I think for me, it's like because the original is so foundationary for me, I kind of think in some ways it's almost not fair for like newer Halloween movies to come out for me to like to compare, just because like it's not going to have the same impact.
Right. Yeah.
So I see that. But I also think like this movie to me, it might be like, I think maybe like one or two script revisions and I think it would have been like fantastic.
Yeah.
But what it is, I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The script, you know, tonally, dialogue wise, leaves, I think, a little bit to be desired. We should note Danny McBride is one of the writers, and you can certainly tell throughout the film. I actually didn't have as much of a problem with the amount of characters. I thought it was actually fine. I kind of liked that it introduced the podcasters at the beginning as, you know, it could be gearing them up to be kind of some of the main characters in the film. And ultimately they're not. They, you know, they get cut off pretty quickly. And I kind of like that when a horror film kind of makes you think that no one is safe, because, you know, if it were kind of a conventional setup where, you know, these are the main characters, you know, like, well, at least they're off limits, or at least one of them is off limits until, you know, the end. And so, yeah, I mean, I was okay with that. Laurie's character to me in this one, much different than H2O, I would say. But, you know, the family element was taken out. But I don't know, just like, I'm trying to put myself in that frame of mind, like 40 years later, she's still like this crazy, this set on taking down Michael. And it's like, part of me is like, well, yeah, he's unstoppable, this and that. But like, no, none of those other films happened. Like, he's literally just been locked up. Like, we don't know like what he's capable of. And I don't know.
He is pure evil. Yeah. And if you encounter that, I would think that would have some impact on you.
Mm-hmm.
So you're okay. You're okay with her character in this. You think like she's a rational, reasonable.
I'm not saying she's reasonable. I'm not saying she's reasonable, but I think it's understandable to see that her life was going one way. Then this event occurs and now like she's forever like changed by it.
I get
it. Mm-hmm. And like, I think that really works. I think you're on to something about it does feel a bit odd that in 40 years she wouldn't have had some sort of development.
I feel like if it was this premise 15 years, 20 years, maybe,
mm-hmm.
like I'd buy it a little more. I mean, I get it. I get what they're working with, but
yeah,
I think that, you know, with her, you know, feeling that, you know, she's all these years she's been prepping and waiting. I feel like that's just some form of survivor's guilt. Just the fact that her friends have been murdered and she's the one who survived and mm-hmm. that he's still alive and he's still out there. Like, it's kind of like a weird PTSD where you're like, you know, I need to be ready for the next situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people feel that way when, you know, they get robbed, you know, they stock up on, you know, security cameras, get guns and, you know, get the rain, like get a whole bunch of new gadgets in their house just to protect them. You know,
I think it's interesting how the movie makes, like, in her life, the only thing that she really has as a constant is Michael. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they talk about her kid was taken away when the kid was 12 and like her home life isn't very good. And, you know, it becomes like an obsession for her and whatnot. And like, I guess I can kind of, there's like a reality to it that like maybe doesn't really pass the smell test, I guess, if you think about like in terms of like realism, like after 40 years, some people would move on. But I do think in terms of like the movie itself and like kind of the horror tropes to it and whatnot, I think it plays decently well.
Yeah, I think what would have been cool is maybe a film in between these two, like kind of showing the daughter's upbringing and her being mm-hmm. sketched out, maybe an additional reason why she is, some other encounter with Michael or something mm-hmm. to just yeah. kind of motivate that. But I mean, when you cut out, you know, 40 years worth of other films, you got to kind of justify that and make up for lost time. So I get it.
The thing I guess I kind of like about it is it has a little bit of that Taxi Driver edge where it's like she's like preparing for this conflict that's going to come, like things are going to come ahead. And then as the movie goes on, it's like Michael doesn't really give a shit about her. So they don't, that's the one thing I wish they would have played a little bit more on. Cause I would have liked to have heard her react to that a little bit. Like, he doesn't really even remember me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or and does he, you know, it's you know, infuriating almost. Cause you can't pull anything from
well,
that.
Well, that's,
you know?
That made a little more sense with the sister angle, you know, if they were siblings, like, you know, he's kind of connected to her in that way. But, you know, now it's like, you know, we find out he's not quite as obsessed with her as she apparently is with him.
He's moved on.
Yeah, he's moved on.
He's got other people he wants to kill.
Like, oh, Lori, I didn't even recognize you.
Oh, this is awkward.
I'm sorry. Let me take this mask off. Oh, my gosh. How are you?
I kind of moved on to other victims now.
Yeah. Ooh,
sorry.
There's this weirdo, like, doctor. My doctor is kind of like, that's the thing.
But hey, we should be friends on Facebook, right? You know,
let me add you.
Oh, you shot me in the shoulder. I'll see you later. Another time. That's probably more than he's said in like 60 years. Let me ask you this. What do you make of Michael as like an old man? Because it seems like age has not stopped him one bit.
He stayed fit, it seems. Yeah. In lockup. And
wouldn't it be weird if he was walking around doing the same exact thing but like one arm just has a cane?
A little rusty.
Or he takes a breather and just sits down for a minute to like stretch his leg because his knees.
Is he heavy
him.
Breathing because he's trying to be ominous or he can't catch his breath?
All right, well, let's get into the plot of the movie, all right?
Let's do it, John.
So, as we mentioned earlier in this timeline, Michael has been at Smith's Grove for 40 years, and our boy is still fit. He's ready. He's raring to go. We meet two bold podcasters who just have to speak to Michael. for their podcast show. I would think, you know, maybe just making some jokes about the Michael murders or something would be fine enough.
That'll be our approach. We're not seeking out serial killer, but should we?
I would say no.
Hey, Michael, would you like the idea of your nickname being Goofy Pooper on this podcast? Just throwing that out there.
So we get these podcasters, Aaron and Dana, and they're going to go speak with Michael. And apparently Aaron has access to the confiscated mask from Michael.
It just let him borrow it for an extended weekend, I guess.
And I think it's cool that like the mask is able to age along with Michael. So it's a little bit older, whatever. And
yeah, what happened to it in 40 years? It's all scratched up.
It's been in a bag.
Up.
I don't understand.
It's like, it looks like a cat got to it and it's like dirty.
I mean, I guess the police may have taken it out like, you know, during office parties. Like, oh, look at me, I'm Michael.
No, so somebody definitely wore it for funsies at one
exactly.
point in 40 years.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. So they go out into the yard and they were like, all right, let's talk to Michael. Michael doesn't respond, obviously. Then he's like, all right, I know it, I'll get him. Let me show him the mask. And literally everyone else there reacts except Michael. And this whole sequence, I'm just wishing he would have just stood in front of Michael and showed it to him instead of just behind him the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to make it all the way to Smith's Grove, you're like this British podcaster, you would think you'd just take a couple extra steps to be eye to eye with Michael as opposed to just standing behind him. Then when he doesn't react, you're like, all right, I guess we'll leave now.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's a little bit of
stretch.
Well, that's movie language. It
yeah,
plays.
No, I know.
It's like you can just see the back of his head. But yeah, it is funny. In practice, you would just like walk to the front of him and he'd probably just look at you. But like if they did that in the film and then he like just turned around away from him, then we'd be clowning on that scene. So so they walk up to him, he just turns around.
Or he just rips an arm off. And they're like, okay, that's why you don't get too close to Michael. But yeah, so they Michael doesn't respond. Everyone's screaming and yelling, and it cuts to the theme song, which is like kind of like an updated John Carpenter theme.
Mm-hmm.
And man, is that cool. I love that like credit sequence where it's like the jack-o'-lantern like coming back to life again. Yeah.
It's like a reverse time lapse of a decaying jack-o'-lantern. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and yeah, the theme is still a banger too.
Yeah, yeah, and I liked it. It's kind of got a little bit more of a, I don't know, like a little bit more of a dance beat to it this time around. I was like, John Carpenter's like, hey, listen, we're doing horror here, but we can have a little fun with it, you know?
Yo, Dead Mouse, what you up to? You want to remix this?
Yeah, let's do it. So then the podcasters go, and then they go to Lori's house, which she only lets them in after they offer $3,000 for an interview. And which I like, because it's like, you know what? I am a shut-in. I cannot get over this thing. I don't want to talk to anybody. But if you're going to give me $3,000, I will endure you for 5 minutes.
Yeah, that is a nice little moment, because they pull up. It's like the stereotypical like hermit house with the gate, all the no trespassing things. You know, you assume she's been dealing with it to some extent for years. You have to imagine, though, it's fizzled out a little bit, because it has been 40 years and nothing else has happened. But right when they say $3,000, she opens the gate. So that's a funny little moment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And so then they get in and they start asking her questions. And I mean, some of us here have some experience interviewing people and for a podcast and asking questions. And I got to say, I think they were a little insufferable with some of these questions.
Right, right. I think the thing is that, like, between the stuff they were doing to Laurie and the stuff they were doing to Michael, they're trying to be like investigative journalists, you know, be shocking and try to get the big scoop, you know, that go over the other podcasts, you know. But obviously, they didn't realize how deep and like scarred these people are.
It's interesting because they're set up as podcast hosts, but they never really feel like podcast hosts. You know, I feel like their personalities should be a little different. Like they feel like I don't know, like British newscasters, like from the BBC or something. Right. They feel more like that. And I don't know.
Also, their equipment is just a recorder.
Yeah,
they don't have mics. They're not trying to get good, clean audio. I don't know. I'm not buying it, man. I don't think they're good podcasters. I would not subscribe to their show.
We can't forget that podcasters are a real filthy lot. Isn't that right, my podcasting friends?
Did you prepare that joke ahead of time? No.
It would have been an interesting angle, though, if they were like just three dudes like us who just like have no credentials, no business being there, that like kind of get in over their heads, you know, that they try to like pursue this. I don't know. As a podcaster, that's what I would have liked to see.
As a professional podcaster here. But so they meet with her. They ask her some insufferable questions. And they're like, yeah, so your daughter was like taken away when she was 12, right? Did you ever get her back? And she's like, you already know that. I didn't.
Yeah.
And then like she's like, all right, get out. I was like, I don't know. Just my opinion. I think I would have been a little bit better at like asking a few softball questions first. Get maybe try to get Lori to like us a little more.
So yeah, who decorated for you in here?
What is your favorite horror movie? None of them. I lived it. Okay. Cool. So Michael, what's he like in real life?
Seems like a real go-getter.
She'd be like, God, didn't you guys just meet him?
How are the other survivors? There were none. Okay.
Ooh. And then he just holds up the mask. He's like, do you feel it, Laurie? Do you feel it? Say something.
I like it if he was like,
he uses it as a puppet. Yeah.
Just like, it's not even worth the $3,000 anymore. Just get the fuck out of here. So next scene we meet, Laurie's estranged daughter, Karen, her husband, Ray, and daughter, Allison. So Allison is going to, I think she's doing some sort of honor roll or
National Honor Society
event. And she's like, oh, did you invite grandma? And her mom, Karen's like, I don't think she'll be able to make it, which apparently Allison actually already called the grandma and invited her. So, you know, Lori might come. So then we get to meet Allison's friends, Vicky and Dave. And then we learn through some not so subtle dialogue that Lori is not related to Michael. And it was, you know, it was just a myth that some people made up to feel better.
Ouch.
So then, you know, we move on at the school. We then meet Allison's boyfriend, Cameron, and his super best friend, Oscar. And folks, I'm not a big fan of this dynamic. Cameron and Oscar, they don't play like real best friends. Like, you have to have years of like great comedic timing and a perfect dynamic like that. And, you know, like Jason and I, we got that. Trevor and I, we got that. Maybe someday Trevor and Jason will be like that. I don't know. But that's real. These two didn't work for me.
Phony baloney.
Oscar is a phony, not to be trusted.
It doesn't help that Oscar looks like a Muppet.
Yeah. He looks like the main character from Mask. Sorry, man. He's like a little too like friendly with like, oh, I'm just a cool friend.
Yeah.
Right, Allison? I'm just a cool guy. But yeah, so then next scene we got Allison. She's in class and she's looking off outside, reminiscent of the, you know, super famous shot from Halloween. Mm. But this time we got Lori standing there watching, and it kind of is like foreshadowing kind of the third act where, you know, Lori becomes the predator instead of the prey.
Yeah, there's a lot of hinting at the role reversal of these two characters in this film, and that shot is a really nice nod to the original. And we've seen the classroom shot a lot. There were a couple other ones, right? I think we need to start keeping a tally of like the looking the looking out the window shot. I didn't go to school that had that many nice windows. I don't think I got that much sunlight.
So then we get to see Lori. She's in her backyard just shooting mannequins, getting ready for Michael. And I gotta say, you know, I know we're supposed to be like, she's, you know, PTSD, she's hurting, whatever. But when she's shooting those mannequins, I'm like, fuck yeah. Get it. You're so cool. Anyway, I really like Jamie Lee Curtis.
Okay, I know I'm harping on this and it's stupid. Yeah. But it's 40 years. Do you still need to practice? Like,
practice makes perfect.
Save your bullets. Like 40
maybe she
years
was really
worth
bad
of bullets.
Before. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, she just picked up a gun like 2 weeks ago. She's
just went to Cabela's.
Maybe for like 30 years, she was like trying to like fix things. And then the last 10 years, she's like, I'm a survivalist now. This is cool. This is my identity now. I don't know. You know, listen, lay off. She's cool.
Yeah, you jerk.
Yeah. Be understanding, stupid. All right. So then we get Lori. She's at the, like, I guess Smith's Grove facility or whatever, and she's watching Michael get transferred to a different facility that's probably going to be more high security or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we get Dr. What's his name? Dr. Sartain?
Sartain.
Yeah, so Dr. Sartain, he's like, all right, it's my job, so I'll go with Michael. Here's the thing. I don't think we need this character whatsoever. Because you can easily just be like, oh, Lori's like the new Loomis, who she's going to go around and tell everybody, like, you fools, he's a maniac.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they get on the bus. Lori's got a gun. She looks like she's about to do something. And then we cut to Allison with her family. They're getting dinner. And then Lori shows up a little late and then just starts kind of telling them her plan was to kill Michael about 20 minutes ago, but she didn't go through with it. Has a breakdown there, and like Allison's boyfriend, Cameron, is in the background, just his eyes are darting left and right, very uncomfortable. The thing, though, I don't know. I understand that Karen probably grew up with her mom being like nutso like this, but I feel like she'd be a little bit more like understanding.
Yeah.
Like if this has been like how things have been like her entire life, you know?
Yeah. I think it's like, cause like, you know, this is like their personal demon and it's just haunted them for all their lives. You know, like most kids, you know, like, you know, don't touch the stove. Don't, you know, do this. They like Karen probably got like, do not go on Halloween. And if Michael's around, you know, just, you know what to do.
Well, it's interesting because she's like, she was like that with Karen. But then when you've seen like in the scenes, some of the scenes before, she's like giving the money to Allison saying, go to Mexico or something, like, yeah, go have fun.
Get out of here. I'd be interested to see like what their dynamic has been the last, you know, 5 years or so.
Yeah.
Because like, I can't quite gauge it from their interactions. Mm-hmm. Like it's like, on some levels, it's almost like they're implying that they never speak or haven't spoken in years. But then it's at other times, it's like they're implying like, you know, they're friendly with each other. You know, they do what they can. You know, Allison wants to know her grandma, so that's fine. I don't know, that whole dynamic. It's interesting, and I want to know a little more about it.
Well, you're kind of getting at kind of when I meant like before about like too many characters. I almost like the amount of the cast and stuff, how many people are in the movie, I feel like sometimes it takes away from like we could have more depth with like the Lori dynamic with her family or something. Yeah. Which I really, you know, I kind of wish there was more to that. I mean, we got two more movies coming out, so hopefully, fingers crossed, we get a little bit more of that. But what I thought was cool though is like when Lori leaves the restaurant, she is kind of like breaking down outside, and then Allison comes out there and like consoles her, and it's like it's a pretty sweet moment, I think, that, where you get to see kind of like that connection there. And
how do we feel about Judy Greer being cast as the daughter? I don't know if I buy that.
It's a bit weird because it's like she's not that funny. Like, it's not, you're not really bringing much with Judy Greer. Like, you know, it's not like she's like, take a look at these, Michael.
No, she did a fine job, and some of it might be like my perception of her, but like I don't know. I feel like that
feels
was
a little waste,
miscast.
Like a waste or something. Yeah. I don't know. Like, especially because she's like pretty, even when she's like mad, she's pretty chill for like,
yeah,
right, yeah.
So I don't know. It's a little weird. I kind of thought like her and Toby Huss don't really feel like a couple really either,
right.
It's a little odd, but no, I liked, but I think like Lori and Allison work quite well together.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
So next scene we got a father and son driving down the road. And, you know, this feels very like Danny McBride. Like, so we got a son who doesn't want to go hunting with his dad because he just wants to dance. He's like, you know, I like hunting maybe on the weekend, but like, I really want to dance. And it's so strange. I don't know, like, I kind of enjoy it on its own, but sometimes some of these like bits feel a little like out of place for the rest of the movie.
Right.
Yeah.
But like, so then they have that, and then immediately it's like, oh shit, they find this Smith Grove bus just like crashed, and like all the patients are running around. So like,
right,
you got the father, he's like, I'll be right back, call the police. So the kid calls the police, he goes out, accidentally shoots Dr. Sartain, and
then he's like laying down in the back of the bus.
Yeah, he's like, oh, don't shoot. Just shoots him. So he goes back to the car, and then fuck, Michael's in the back seat and just smushes his head a few times and snaps his neck.
Yeah, man. And like,
pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty shocking. Like, you know, the kid deaths. We talked about that a little bit over the weekend, yeah, with Assault on Precinct 13, how that's kind of the incident that sets the whole thing.
Yeah.
Sets the whole thing off.
This little kid just goes right in, yeah, the head.
Actually, if you think about it, the little kid was probably the most tamest murder in the whole movie. Because like, yeah, he got off easy.
Yeah, well, yeah, he just got his neck snapped, and then that's it. Poor dance kid. He just wants, right, to dance, man. Exactly.
Now he's
but
dead.
Yeah, so Michael snaps his neck, and then now we're introduced to Deputy Hawkins, who's playing pinball, and then he goes to the crime scene, and then he finds Dr. Sartain is still alive. Then we get to the podcasters go to Judith Meyer's grave, which I'm not quite sure why they need to be recording at the grave itself, because it's not like no listener would be able to tell that they're like, yeah, at the grave versus just in like a hotel room or something. But mm-hmm,
yeah,
their hyperbolic nature demands them do it, and that's how Michael finds them and then follows them to kind of a pretty crazy sequence.
Yeah, this is like kind of like what I was discussing with you off mic, John, how during the movie Michael gets away with so much in the open, and mm-hmm, like there's like a lot of people around, like it's kind of like those situations where like you're out in the open, you just hear somebody shouting like, what's going on, and then like you missed a whole bunch of stuff, and like you just catch the tail end of it.
Yeah. So Trevor, you were also telling me that the gas station they were at was actually the gas station that they used in Halloween 4, correct?
Yes, it's a scene where Loomis encounters Michael right before like it explodes and everything. Mm-hmm. And like, this is one of many like, you know, callbacks in the movie that, you know, we'll may or may not talk about during the podcast that, you know, relates to all the other Halloween movies.
That's cool.
Yeah, actually, one thing, Jason, I'm not sure if you picked up on this, I actually looked it up and found this out, but so that kid Cameron, the boyfriend,
mm-hmm,
they, you know how like they have Allison's father keeps mentioning Cameron's father,
yeah, and how they did like peyote in the woods or something. Yeah.
So apparently Cameron's father is actually one of the kids that's bullying the little kid Tommy in the first one, where they they mess with his jack-o'-lantern and stuff.
Gotcha.
So Cameron is not from a nice family. And you know, he not a good guy, that's what we learn. But
we are officially on Weenie Watch, ladies and gentlemen.
we'll get to that. I think Oscar might be a good contender.
Okay.
Oscar Meyer.
Oh god.
All right, sorry.
All right, you're on notice. All right, so anyway, getting back to the movie. All right, so the podcaster's at the gas station. Aaron's filling up the car. Dana goes to the bathroom. And then when Dana's like talking to the cashier or whatever, in the background, you should, like what Trevor was referencing, you can see Michael just beating the living shit out of the mechanic for like a split second. Then Michael goes into the girl's bathroom after Dana, and he gives her a present of sorts. I was thinking like it's almost like a cat brings like a dead bird, and he's like, I brought you a present.
Yeah. Some teeth.
Here's some teeth. You need, you're British. You need more teeth. So he goes and he drops the teeth. And I don't know, the first time I saw it, I was like, I didn't really find it to be that scary, but I found it very bewildering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of works well for like, what the fuck does this mean? Why would he do this?
The teeth or the whole bathroom sequence?
The teeth.
Like,
well, because he never does that before.
Yeah.
He's not much of like a taunter as far as like props.
Yeah, he's usually
prop guy.
Yeah, he's not a prop comic. No. The only thing I could think of is that he put on the sheet in the original, which is a little bit weird.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good flavor to like the story.
That's true.
It's interesting anyway, but like it's maddening in a way. But so he drops the teeth, and then Aaron's like, well, let me walk over to the cashier. Cashier's, his jaw has been removed, and all these teeth are gone. And then he looks over at the mechanic. Mechanic's dead. So then he's like, oh, shit, I better go in the bathroom. And he brings a crowbar, which did not really do much of anything against Michael. Michael just keeps smacking him around. And then he like knocks him through. He uses Aaron's head to push open the bathroom stall where Dana is, and you know, I guess it's implied that Aaron dies, and then he snaps Dana's neck.
Yeah, those are pretty abrupt death scenes. Like, I know we talked about it a little before the show. I kind of thought they were setting up these podcasters to be kind of more of the main characters, or at least bigger characters, and. Yeah, we do introduce a lot of characters, and you know, I stated my issues with, you know, them being podcasters and their characters themselves. But I think the way they were used, I'm actually fine with. I like when a horror film kind of establishes early on that, you know, that no one is safe. Basically, you know, it's like these two characters we established at the beginning. You know, now they're dead. We're not even a third of the way through. Maybe a third of the way through. But I don't know. I like the sequence. Bathrooms are always creepy to me. I don't. There's something about being on a stall. You're very vulnerable. There's nowhere to go.
Also, and, like there's like a grungy feeling to her having to crawl under.
Yeah, it's always crawling under. There's you always got to crawl under. Yeah.
Is it really worth it to survive this if you have to touch wet?
Yeah. Who determined how much space is underneath bathroom stalls, by the way? Like, why is that? Like, I mean, a couple inches probably would have done the trick. I mean, right, exactly. I don't know.
Yeah. But isn't the real reason they have it like that so that way, like, they could mop real easily and it just goes down the drain?
That's probably true. Probably, yeah. I know the moisture. Yeah. There's got to be some sort of gap. The mop makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So then Michael, he goes outside and he gets his mask back. And guys, Michael's back, baby.
Woo! Woo! He's lucky that they had the mask with them. That is awesome.
What are the odds?
Next, we got Deputy Hawkins and Lori. They show up the crime scene, and you get like a little bit of some knowing looks between the two. I don't think he was really that necessary to the plot or whatever. I feel like for most of this, it's just going to be me going, you know, they could have consolidated Hawkins with like Lori just doing more like detective work instead, and it would have been cooler. I don't know.
Well, that may have helped at least my problems with Laurie's character, honestly, you know, if they kind of consolidated some of these other characters into
we should just start calling meat shields, like meat shield number 12, you know. He
meat shield, that's your Twitter name for July, right?
Write that down.
No, but seriously, you should write it down.
While you're at it, can you do hashtag Hartnett is canon and see if that's
sure thing. Sure thing.
So next we got Michael, and this is a weird sequence. All right. So it's just him hanging out in like during Halloween, and he just goes like house to house, just like destroying people.
He's like, he's making up for lost time. He's just like a bulldozer, basically. Yeah. It's an interesting sequence. It's really unsettling. And it's just like, I love how he just walks through the town. Like, this is the town where this stuff happened, and he's just like walking around. And, like, oh, there's just an older gentleman dressed as Michael Myers. That's not in poor taste or anything. They just accept it.
Well, it's like the one that I thought was like really weird is like where you're the camera's on the window and you see him like walk down the alley and then inside while she's like She's like on the phone, then she goes to look out the window, and then he's like right behind her.
Yeah. Like, so that's like, we assume she just got the news that Michael Myers escaped, right? Like somebody called her.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, probably.
The gossip is spreading. She's like, oh, really?
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then he's that's brutal. He just like slams her head in and stabs her through the neck.
Yeah. It's kind of eerie how like, it doesn't feel like he stopped for a moment to think. It's just like all natural for him. Like, okay, grab hammer, walk in, hit that woman in the head, take the knife, walk out, you know. It just like, it was all natural for him, you know?
He's probably like the whole time he's walking into this, he's like, oh, that gas station, that was so sloppy. You're better than that, Michael. You're better than that.
Goddamn amateur. Mikey.
You spent too much time on the teeth. But
No, Michael, the teeth plate. The teeth plate.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like Martin Scorsese. You got to show the teeth. You got to show the teeth. It's got to play. Then you go for the kill. You know, but I do. So my question to you guys is, and I might be, I'm admitting I'm being nitpicky. So anyone at home, you get mad at me, let it go. All right. It's fine. I know I'm being nitpicky. But now the way Michael went about and killed people in this sequence, to me, it felt a little bit like weird, because it's like in the original and stuff, his mode of killing is more like slow, deliberate, kind of like following people and then like whatever. Whereas this feels very like what Trevor was saying, feels very like random, and like it's not like he's enjoying it as much as like he's just doing it and moving on. I mean, what do you guys make of that?
Well, it's like when an old band reunites that has like, you know, one third the original members and they play like county fairs and stuff. It's like that's like Michael. He's just like going through the motions, just like rushing through it. Like,
all right.
Right. Right. And I also kind of think that for me, like, I feel like the idea that Michael is killing all these people, you know, like really quickly and random, it's almost like it's breathing for him. You know, it's like, it's easy. Just bah, 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 you know, just it's really easy just to stab
Did
him.
Did you just turn into a sheep for a second?
Bah, bah, black sheep. No, but.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Three.
No, but I mean, like. I guess, you know, I think he's like, just, you know, he's just like, you know, since there's more people out and about like than it was that Halloween night, he has more opportunities, you know, than just killing a few babysitters.
Mm-hmm. You're right. You're right. I would just say, to me, it's interesting because it has a different vibe to it though, mm-hmm. than how he's presented as a killer in the original and some of the other films, because it's so like almost like a bulldozer, like, all right, well, I'm going to cause destruction, boom, boom, boom. And then, mm-hmm.
yeah, right? I like that sequence. I mean, I don't have a problem with it. And you stated you were picking nits, so you're not a fan.
Well, I'm not saying I have mixed emotions on it.
Okay.
It is cool on its own. It's pretty legit on its own. Yeah. I just go like, is this where it gets to me being like, but it's not the way John Carpenter did it, guys. You know, like that kind of thing. And
it's
like,
not
that's
like he's sprinting though. You know, it's like, he was like running across.
Yeah. I guess like from watching the film, I will say that the pace of this movie is quite different from the original. Mm-hmm. It is much more of a faster paced.
The pacing is just, it's a little inconsistent overall. And I don't know if it's necessarily a bad thing or a good thing. I don't know. It's just at points I felt like the pacing did feel like the original. And then at other points, you know,
you're right.
What are they doing? Where are they going with this?
Next, we got the dance, the Halloween dance, and we got Allison and Cameron there. They're dressed up as Bonnie and Clyde, but once you know it, they switch costumes. Cameron's
what a kooky, you know, bunch.
Yeah. I think that's kind of a funny, I don't know. It's like a thing, like I could see like younger, like, you know, high school kids doing like, look at how edgy we are. Look how progressive we are. Yeah. We're doing this. I don't know. I just thought that's like, it feels very like kind of the moment for like how, you know, high school kids would be acting and how that's very different from, you know, it's not like it's repeating the same kind of like classic all-American whatever, like of the original or something. But it's like kind of more current day kids.
I like that detail, and I think it's a nice touch. You know, we talked about earlier how they're redoing these shots with Laurie instead of Michael, and there's this kind of role reversal there, and then you see that same role reversal in the Bonnie and Clyde with the granddaughter, and mm-hmm. you know, I like it for that aspect.
So then we get this girl, this tiger girl. She kisses Cameron.
She's mecking on the cam man.
And Allison sees that. And then she runs away and Cameron is like, oh, shit.
It was nothing. She was whispering.
Yeah. Well, it's so weird because it's like he could have just been like, yeah, she was drunk. I'm sorry. What happened? Like, she just kind of laid it on me. I was like, whoa, what?
He was not in the right state of mind to come up with a quick excuse like that because he was a few sheets to the wind at that point. Well,
yeah, but it didn't seem like it was, he wasn't like intentionally making out with this girl. This girl like kissed him. I feel like you could be like, oh, she did that, not me. But like, instead he's just like, she was whispering in my mouth. That's
what this is what the Native Americans do, you know?
What?
I don't know. What the fuck? I don't even know what we're doing.
So in college, the way we would react to Trevor saying something like that is everyone would just in Houston go, whatever, Trevor. And he hated it so much.
Yeah, it kind of makes me wonder why I go to a psychologist now.
whatever, Trevor. anyway, so Cameron, Allison, they're arguing, and then Allison's phone's ringing, and then Cameron's like, you know what? Let's go to the cheese dip.
It was like a punch bowl of cheese dip.
Yeah.
It was like, they're gone hard. What was that?
And also, it's like you just kind of hear it still ringing. So she could have picked it up. I was like, kind of thought that was like weird because it's like, those phones are expensive.
Yeah, asshole. Yeah. I don't got Apple Care, fucker.
Yeah. So, meanwhile, they're kind of cutting to Allison's friend Vicky, who's babysitting Julian, who apparently is exactly like Danny McBride in a number of ways. Like, sounds just like him, only he's like, you know, like, I don't know, what is he, like eight?
Yeah. I love that kid. That did great. This is a moment where I think the humor really played.
Yeah,
for me.
He's so great.
There's some parts in the film where the humor felt a little out of place, but this, I feel like it really worked in this little sequence.
Yeah, I love that kid.
Yeah, he was great.
So Vicky, her boyfriend Dave comes over. They start making out. Unfortunately, Julian has to interrupt and say, "Hey, the boogeyman's upstairs." And like, oh, all right, I'll go see what's, yeah. So Vicky goes upstairs and it's like, all right, there's no boogeyman, whatever. And then she goes to close. This is like one of my favorite parts. She goes to close the closet door. It won't close. So then she opens it and Michael's there, you know, like
what? So she clearly wasn't taking him seriously if she didn't at least check the closet.
But she
also trick him right before that and scare him. So
yeah. Also, I mean, she just wants to make out with her boyfriend.
Yeah.
Who for some reason got a tattoo of the date on his shoulder, and that was supposed to mean something.
Expiration date.
That's pretty good. All right, Trevor, you're redeemed. But it was like weird because they cut to like a close up to show you later that it like the tattoo was the date. And I was like, OK, whatever. But anyway, so Michael kills her, and then off screen, I believe he kills the boyfriend. And then you have like, was it Hawkins shows up, goes inside to look around, and he sees like the damage Michael did. So he's looking around, and then Lori shows up and she takes her gun out and she looks up and she sees Hawkins in one room, then looks over and sees Michael in the other room. So she just like takes out the gun, aims it at Michael, pulls the trigger. But God damn it, it was a mirror. And that's when Michael, I guess, kind of decides, all right, I'm out of here. And then he leaves. And then Lori's like, Michael, and then shoots him in the shoulder, and then he just like looks at her and keeps walking.
What the fuck?
Yeah. But imagine your whole, like, the last 40 years of your life was about like, he's gonna come and get me and I'm gonna be ready, and then he sees like, oh, it's you, okay, anyway, I'm walking away now, later.
So now Oscar is walking Allison home from the dance. Allison just had a pretty bad date. She's got cheese sauce on her phone. And Oscar's a little tuned up, and, you know, he's playing the nice guy card.
You deserve someone better, you deserve, you know?
So much better. And they take a little shortcut that's not really a shortcut through someone's yard. He tries to kiss her and gets rejected, and he's just like sloppy drunk. He falls down in the yard, and there's like these motion sensor lights that turn on. And this is kind of a cool scene, you know? Allison, she keeps going, and Oscar's just laying there all drunk. And we get this cool sequence of Oscar seeing Michael kind of in the shadows, and he thinks it's the owner of the house, and he's like, I'm sorry, I'm on my way, I'll show myself out,
I'll get out soon, just don't worry.
But there's this cool little lighting trick where the light keeps going off, and then, you know, when there's motion it comes back on. So I thought that played well, you know, every time it turns off and on you don't know where Michael is and he's in a different spot. And I thought that was a pretty cool sequence, even if the intermittent time the lights are on is wildly inconsistent. But
I do think this is the only scene that I kind of got unnerved. Like, I'm like, Jesus.
You're like, where is he? And one point he's silhouetted with the lights directly behind him.
Well, they need that, because you would be like, oh, hey, you're not the owner because you have a mask on.
Yeah. So then Oscar dies. He gets hung up on a spiky gate post that goes through his chin. And he's like, before he dies, he's screaming for help. And then, you know, Allison comes back reluctantly, like, what's he doing? She's not sure if he's messing around. And sees him, and then she sees Michael for the first time.
I think it was cool because they have there's like a music cue where I guess she runs up, when she looks at the body, the motion sensors turn up, then you hear like John Carpenter's score just start blaring.
Yeah,
like, and then it's like, oh shit, Michael's right there. And then she just books it down the road.
And while this is happening, you know, Laurie and the cops convince Laurie's family to go hide out at her house, and they're like, we'll get somebody to pick up Allison and take her there. So now Allison's in the cop car with Hawkins and Dr. Sartine, and so they see Michael and
I just love how this occurs. Like, it's like, oh, of course.
Yeah. So Michael's conveniently on the road, and Hawkins just runs him over.
And fucking Scott.
He's down. Sartain jumps out of the car, immediately says, he's dead. You killed him. Sartain's character arc takes kind of a weird turn. He gets a little like penknife out and then kills Hawkins. And then we realize he's got this like kind of odd fascination with Michael, or like, he's just like, he doesn't want him to die. Like, we got to find out more. We need him to talk something. So
he wants to see Michael in the wild.
Yeah.
To study him.
So he puts Michael in the backseat with Allison.
Well, there's also a whole part that doesn't, I don't quite get what he was going for, but like, he puts on Michael's mask for a little bit.
He just had to wear it.
Like, all of this felt like kind of like very choreographed, like almost like a wrestling heel turn. Like, you know, like, you know what I hate? The fans. And then he whips out like that pen he got, probably bought off from flea market from a guy who has a bunch of Nazi flags. Cause it's like, if you look at the, pen, it looks like weird and stuff, like some weird,
well, it's a spine or something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. So like, I'm expecting, you know, it's just odd. That's all.
And that's an interesting like character pivot. Like, is this something that he's been planning for years and just, you know,
independent of how it occurs, I think it's interesting because it feels like a good inverse of Loomis. Loomis is doing everything he can to kill Michael, and Sartain is doing everything he can to see Michael at his like at his full potential or something.
Right.
You
right.
know, like, yeah. So it's an interesting inverse of that.
We should mention, we also find out at this time that Sartain orchestrated the entire bus crash and basically helped Michael escape, which is, he's getting fired.
He's not a very good doctor, though, when he's like, oh, you killed Michael.
He hasn't even like bent over yet to look at him. He's like, oh, he's dead.
Shucks,
you killed him.
I think it might have worked a little bit better if he like knocked out Hawkins and then did the rest of the stuff that occurs, because it doesn't feel like such a a big step then.
I agree. I can buy the doctor wanting Michael at his disposal more and wanting to see him more. I don't know if I buy him instantly becoming a killer. Like if his hand was forced or if there was kind of a build up to that, I feel like that would have made him a little more interesting, a little more intriguing, a little more sympathetic. I don't know, but I think it would have added a little more dimension to that character. And yeah, no, I think that's a good point, John. So Michael's in the back of the car with Allison. He's knocked out, but not for long. He starts to wake up.
I love that there's this whole part where, like, to get him to pull over, Allison's like, well, he spoke to me. And he's like, what did he say?
Yeah.
What did he say? You said Judith? What did he say? And he, like, pulls over and he's, like, asking her. It's like, you're supposed to be a smart man.
He's obviously been a psychologist for like 60 years. He's like,
it's outsmarted by a high school girl. Like,
she's definitely telling the truth. She's not just trying to escape.
No way, she's a fibber.
Boiled again. No, but he pulls over and then she, like, realized that Michael woke up and put the mask back on. Then he just starts kicking the cage in the back seat and, like, just destroys Sartain. And then Michael goes out and starts moving the body and just smushes his head with one stomp.
It's like a jack-o'-lantern, man. He's just
While that's happening, Allison just gets out of the police car and fucking books it into the woods.
It's always the woods.
And once you know it, it's right by where Lori's house is.
Mm. It's a small town, folks.
Yeah. There's a whole scene with, like, two cops that are hanging out outside of Lori's house, and they're talking about, what was the
sandwiches. They were talking about sandwiches. Like his wife makes a sandwich.
Have either of you had that before?
Of course. Love banh mi's.
No, I never had.
Okay. Like, I was hearing this dialogue, and to me, it sounded like something a conversation you and I would have, where you'd be like, of course I've had banh mi sandwiches. And then you're like, well, that's the name of the bread, but the contents therein, you know, like,
No, that's a good point. We would have had that exact same conversation. And I and also would have enticed you by putting peanut butter on it.
I love peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And you're like, well, what do you have to eat over there? And I'm like, oh, it's a brownie I made by myself. He's like, what are you, five? Like, I really don't think that fits in the sequence of events of what's occurring in that movie, but I do really like that scene on its own.
I agree. Yeah. I found it amusing, but that's one of the moments where I was like, I don't know if the humor quite fits right here.
It's like a face stomp and then, like, Danny McBride humor. And I was like, oh, okay. But I wasn't actually planning to talk about it, but I did think just now, I was like, oh, that's kind of like us. Like, you would know.
No, that's a good, point. Oh. It really is.
Well, because you're like, well, of course I've had that before.
Yeah,
I'm like, I don't even remember the name of it because it's so foreign to me.
I always,
like,
try to get you to try new foods, and you always revert back to what you're comfortable with. So this is definitely a tactic I would use to get you to eat something.
Because I'm a little baby. So we got Ray is inside Lori's house, and then he sees a cop car show up. And he's like, what's going on there? So he goes out there and opens the cop car to see a cop's head turned into a jack-o'-lantern. And then Michael just kind of sneaks up behind him and chokes him.
This, I would have loved to see this plotted out and behind the mask, because that probably took a lot of work in the little time he had to do it.
Yeah,
that
was really festive too.
Maybe he had the one cop first and he messed up on that head, and he's like, all right, I gotta throw that away, go on to the next cop. And he's like, can't mess this up, there's no more cops to do this to.
Stop destroying the heads, Michael.
Yeah.
Don't stop him.
Made a huge mistake. All right, so Ray's dead, RIP to a real one. Who got peanut butter on his fingers and said, oh, I got peanut butter on my penis. In front of his daughter. It's very strange.
Yeah, he's a goofy character.
He's a goober. He's a goofy pooper. Right. All right, so Michael attacks Lori. He goes through like the window and the door, and he's attacking Lori. And Lori's like, "All right, that's enough of this," and shoots off the shotgun, and it just destroys two of his fingers.
Well, we should mention Lori has spent 40 years preparing for this moment, and immediately gets foiled by Michael. Like, he's not even in the house yet, and he has her like grabbed through the window.
Okay. Well, you know what? She hasn't had many trial runs. Like, it's not like she's had it happen again.
John, you've been nitpicking this whole time. Give me one.
I mean, she's
like Lori in this. I don't know.
I mean, she's no Kevin McAllister, so I mean,
Kevin McAllister comes up way more in this podcast than I ever even dreamed.
He's a sociopath, dude.
He's a lovable scamp.
Anyway, so yeah, Lori gets kind of foiled by Michael because he uses both arms. But she does shoot off two fingers, so she gets a little bit of an advantage. And I gotta say, Michael, who's an old, old man, powers through losing two fingers. And so Lori goes into the bunker with Karen. Michael walks in, and I guess so she points the gun up and shoots Michael. Then she goes up the steps, and this is where we finally get this kind of like reversal of the predator and prey kind of thing they've been like hinting at this whole time. And Lori eventually follows like a blood trail up the steps into a bizarre room that has a bunch of mannequins in there.
The mannequin storage room, the ones that she was shooting.
Yeah. She shoots at, yeah. So then she's like looking around for him, and she sees the blood trail go to the closet, which is obviously reminiscent of the finale of the first film.
Yeah.
She opens that up and he's not in there. She sees like the door to the deck is open. So Michael's also trying to make her think, oh, maybe he got out, jumped out there. No, Michael's hiding behind a mannequin, attacks her. They fight for a little bit. They do a little fighting with a knife. Michael eventually throws her off the deck. She lands on the ground. At the same time, finally, Allison makes it to the house. Allison comes in the front door, and the noise of her yelling, "Grandmother, grandmother," which is a weird way to like talk to.
She refers to her as that the whole film, and even she's even in her phone as grandmother. I don't know what they're I don't know what the writers were.
It's more formal, I guess, way that she knows her. She wants to have maybe she wants to have more of a better relationship with her, mm-hmm. or whatever. Yeah. Anyway, so she yells, "Grandmother, grandmother." Michael turns back. All of a sudden, then you hear like a classic Halloween music cue, and Lori's not, she has disappeared from over the deck.
Yeah.
Which is obviously reminiscent of the end of Halloween.
Yeah, that was a nice touch. I like mm-hmm. that.
Allison goes into the bunker with Karen. Michael goes downstairs and looks around and realizes where the secret bunker is. And I guess it's like, I don't know what you would call that, like a kitchen island or something?
Yeah,
I don't
know. Yeah.
So he starts trying to knock that over to get in. And so he knocks it over. Karen grabs her, what looks to be her old gun from when she was 12, because it's got like her initials on it.
It's got it's in like little like glitter dew paint that you would put on like construction paper back in the day.
So she grabs the gun, and then like, you know, Michael's about to go in, you know, come down the steps, and she starts screaming for Lori, and she's like, "I can't do this. I can't do this." So Michael shows up, and then she's like, "Gotcha," and then shoots him in the neck. And then Lori appears in like kind of a shadow that's reminiscent of the finale of Halloween, the original. And I forget what she says, but then she attacks him. There's a scuffle, whatever. Michael goes down the steps into the bunker. They get out of the bunker. Lori hits a button, and then, oh man, surprise. She actually, that bunker can be used to keep him in there.
Yeah, like creates a little like cage over the opening almost and traps him.
So then Michael's stuck in there, and then she pushes the button, and then the house starts being lit on fire, and she's like, "Ta-ta, Michael."
Yeah, so it was, someone's like, it's not a cage, it's a trap or something.
Yeah,
like that. Yeah. How do we feel about the gotcha moment? Like, what was the point of that one? Like, she's acting like she's really afraid. It's almost like they rehearsed it back when she was 12.
Because when you think about it, like, you know, a predator senses when someone's afraid and weak and stuff, so he takes advantage of the moment. and then she just surprises him because she thinks, oh, yeah, she's like, is he so used to people being afraid of him and not ready for him?
I think it's a little contrived, but I think the general thing is that Michael knows to some degree they have weapons down there.
Mm.
That if she's like seeming scared, he can feel confident to just go at her directly.
Yeah, but you're right. He knows there's weapons down there, and he's coming down either way.
Yeah,
if she's quiet or not. I think Laurie's line, doesn't she say "Happy Halloween, Michael"?
Yeah. I remember, like, even though I was like complaining before, but like I remember when she says it, I was like, yes.
Oh, that makes one of us. Okay.
Fuck you, Jason.
I didn't fist pump. I was like, yeah.
The fire starts burning the house. They get out of there. They get into a truck or whatever, and they're in the back seat. And then we get like some shots of like the house burning, kind of reminiscent of the end of the original, where you see all the spots where Michael might be. But in this one, it's like you're seeing all the areas that are burning.
Yeah, they show the bunker burning, and he's not at least where he was standing originally. So it's like,
yeah,
did he get out? Is it empty? I mean, it's big bunker. He could be somewhere else, but
yeah,
you know, we know there's a sequel coming, so he got out.
And then at the very end, after the credits roll, you get to hear Michael breathing as the last like shot of the credits or whatever. You hear him breathing.
Yeah, when's the new one come out?
Supposed to be this year, I thought.
Mm-hmm. October. I don't know. I know it's like closer to Halloween, so I think it's probably like the third or fourth week.
I'm intrigued by it.
I am too. And from what I hear, it pretty much focuses focuses on the town's outrage of Michael and all that stuff. And it kind of like the whole mob mentality, kind of like how, you know, Frankenstein, you know, and the mob of people, you know, kind of
thought. Yeah, that's cool.
Did these ladies at the end of this film have a chance to properly process Ray's death? Do they, like, they saw him die, right? Or did they not when he went outside?
I think they assumed he's dead because he's
because they don't really, it's not really ever a second thought.
Right.
Like, no. Is Ray okay? No one ever checks. And I think that's one of, like, we go back to the script. That's kind of like one of the many characters. It's almost just like disposable. And how'd you describe it, Trevor? Like, you just fodder for
yeah, meat shields. Yeah. Right. Like, Ray actually is okay. He gets up like, oh, geez, what the hell happened?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That was the last fire. Shot. Jesus Woo! Christ.
Yeah. That was some wild peyote.
Oh, I got peanut butter on my penis. Yeah.
Roll credits.
I would have liked, I don't know, in an alternate universe, it would have been cool to see what it would have been like if Michael gets killed like earlier on, and then like Lori's going around looking for Michael, and she's like actually killing people thinking they're Michael or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or like she goes off the deep end and becomes the next Michael. Like, she fulfills the, you know, predator prey switch that the movie's kind of talking about. I think that would have been kind of an interesting way to go, but I don't know if that would have been very popular with horror fans, if that's the way it went. But interesting thought anyway.
Yeah.
So at this point, we have seen Peeping Tom, Psycho, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Black Christmas, the original Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street, Scream, Behind the Mask, Here Next, and It Follows. So this Halloween movie is interesting, as we talked about earlier, as it's a remake and a sequel in one. There's a article I read a while ago that was by a critic, Matt Singer, and he like coined the term as a legacy sequel. Like, it's a legacy movie where you have legacy characters from the original, but it's kind of a remake in a way. Like, I think Force Awakens kind of functions on that level. Scream 4.
Yeah, I really like that term. I haven't heard that before, but that's a good way to describe it. Somewhere between a sequel and a remake.
And that's why I kind of wanted to include this one, because I thought it was an interesting, it's not completely specific to horror, but it's kind of a trend that's been going on in Hollywood in general, and they want to revitalize these properties, but people have learned that actual remakes are terrible for the most part. So it's like, okay, we're going to erase most of it except the first one, and then we're just going to try to have a cleaner sequel to this and see where it goes down the line, you know? As we've kind of gone along, we have detailed how it's very similar to the original.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, it's interesting because they never reference in the first Halloween. Obviously, Michael gets put away in asylum because he killed his sister. And in this one, they don't really reference that nearly as much as his killing spree in 1978. Mm-hmm. So it's like the 1978 spree is now like kind of like the prequel aspect of what is making him scary to everybody now, whereas in the original what was scary was the killing his sister.
You can actually say that about the Amityville Horror House, like the actual house, because you know you have this actual murder, but then you have this supposed haunting happen, and the more people remember the haunting than the actual murder. And it's kind of terrible because the haunting is it's fake. So
yeah. And this one's interesting too, because we got, you know, we discussed throughout how you have this kind of role reversal of predator and prey. And there's also this theme of female empowerment, too, I would say, because you have essentially three final girls at the end. Mm-hmm.
Three generations of women who have been affected by this one incident.
Right.
So I think that's pretty interesting. And we were talking off mic, right, where I talked about the original ending of the So the original ending was going to be a knife fight between Laurie and Michael, where they basically hurt each other pretty severely, that it's implied both of them are gonna die from their wounds. And it's pretty somber, and I think this was maybe a better tactic, because you're kind of adding more to, you know, these three generations of women fighting back against Michael, and it feels more empowering, a more positive message, I guess, kind of by the end of it, rather than like kind of a, you know, a darker, somber tone of like, well, there's nothing she could do. She was just intrinsically linked to Michael forever, and that's it, you know, like, and that's why they both die or whatever.
I will say, like, I was a little lukewarm on this overall, but if I am very intrigued by the sequels, if they take the elements that worked in this film and expand on them, and, you know, just kind of tighten some things, I think it could be a really good series for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So, Trevor.
Yes.
Would you survive this killer?
Well, that's very tough, because, you know, it is Michael Myers, you know, he is the terror of Haddonfield, but at the same time, he's an old man. So I think, you know, I would be, you know, preemptively kind of like Laurie, I'd be ready for the situation. But instead of getting guns, I'm thinking maybe have a bunch of Werther's ready, because I know old people love Werther's.
The caramels.
Werther's original.
Exactly.
They're original.
Yeah, exactly. So like if I presented it to him, maybe I get through, you know, that maybe, you know, his heart grows twice the size, like, you know, you're not a bad kid, Trevor. And then just feel good.
For the rest of the series, Trevor's just kind of like hanging out near Michael, and Michael doesn't really bother him.
We go on
him.
Adventures, you know.
This is sounding like pretty sad, actually. Like a weird wish fulfillment.
Trevor's like happy to be alive, but also like feels bad that he's not standing up for any of these brutal murders.
Hey, he's not a bad guy.
He's the older brother I never had.
They have a big falling out when they only have like the reduced sugar Werther's one day or whatever.
Look, gentlemen, it's not about the people that were murdered. It's about the friends you make along the way.
Trevor gets killed because he can't find any Werther's original and just gives him some root beer barrels.
I just got you the Chewies. I thought you wanted those.
Why? What about you, Jason?
I don't remember what I said for the first Halloween, and my answer should be consistent, but it probably won't be. would I survive? Okay, we go back to my whole approach of this. Who would I be? And this one, got to be Oscar. The podcaster. No, Oscar.
I don't know.
Get the hell out of here.
You're the cop that has the bomby.
No, no, we're the podcasters. I'm the podcaster. Okay.
So you're Aaron, I'm Dana.
Boom. would I survive, Michael? I think so. I think I would. Trevor made a good point. He's pretty old now. But he's got to be, what was he in the first one? He's got to be at least like, what, 60 now?
Yeah, he's definitely in his 60s.
60s, yeah. So, I mean, he's in good shape. But
well, he's older than Jamie Lee Curtis. We know that, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I survive. I don't know. I don't babysit. I'm not a cop. I'm not an obsessed doctor. Yeah. You know, I think even if I am the podcaster and I go to interview him, if he says nothing, I'm pretty sure I'm like, all right, well, let's scrap this episode, or like say we tried, yeah, and then we're moving on. We're on to the next thing.
You're not going to the bathroom to check on me.
No, I'm not going to the bathroom. I'm not going to get the mask. No.
No.
No. Yeah. No.
You're not going to Judith Myers.
Yeah, I'm not going to the grave.
No. Nope.
So I like to think that I'm a more clear-headed podcaster than they were.
Yeah.
So yeah,
we're far superior to them. Yeah. Well, okay. So for me, all right. Michael's an old guy. We've mentioned this. Mm-hmm. I don't really like old people. So I'm going straight for the fucking knees, and he's going down. I don't know if I can kill him, but if I go for those knees, he is going to the hospital. He's going to rehab for those knees. That's going to take a very long time.
Screw up a sciatica. Yeah. It's all collateral damage. So
I'm taking his like seat pillow or whatever. If I'm aware he's coming for me, I think I'll be all right. If I'm like one of the people that's in the house and I turn around, there he is, I'm done.
So right? if you have a chance to take care of his old age, you think you're fine. You can kick out the knees and
I'll euthanize that bitch.
Trevor's over here watching The Price is Right with him and eating Werther's Original, and you're trying to kick out his knees.
Trevor's holding his hand watching. Hi, big bro.
John, leave him alone.
I mean, I'll get the knees, but I'm also quite incompetent, so he might crawl and get me still. I don't know. He might have good upper body strength. I don't know. He seems to be pretty strong.
It's true. It's true.
But, well, because, like, if you think about it, actually, he had two fingers shot off, and he was still pretty good the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty strong, you know, so...
I don't know, man. I think you kick those knees like you might break your foot. Like that you just kicked down the cage of a cop car like it was nothing. And you're like, oh, he's got weak knees.
All right. So I die.
Oh. Do you mind if I go take a look and see what's going on?
Yeah, let me... All right, that does it for this week's episode. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. And next week, we will be reviewing Freaky. Until then,
stab you later!
All right, so now Oscar and... Wait, no, it's not Allison, right?
It's Allison. Yeah. I wrote Lori.
Oscar, you dog.